Hi there, it's Coco here from Expert Speak English, and today I'm going to be talking to you about quiet quitting. So together, let's explore the subtle dynamics of quiet quitting in the workplace in our latest episode, Cracking the Code, Unveiling Quiet Quitting. Discover actionable insights for fostering healthier work-life balance and prioritizing well-being. Remember how to say that. It's not quite quitting, because that sounds like you haven't quite quit yet. It's quiet quitting. Shh. Quiet quitting. So quiet quitting is a term that refers to doing everything in your job description, but not going the extra mile, not working any more hours than necessary to do so.
Welcome to the Experts Speak English podcast. Together, we'll discover how to talk yourself into an international career without the bullshit. And at the end of each episode, I give you an opportunity to try out what you have just learned on the show, because I give you Coco's Communication Challenge. And that gives you an opportunity to get out there and try out one of the tools, techniques, or tips that you will have heard on the show. I'm Corinne Wilhelm. I'm a corporate communication coach with over 20 years of experience of helping leaders to secure the career that they deserve through intentional communication, intercultural awareness, and the confidence to show up as the English speaking expert. So let's get cracking, shall we?
To my mind, quiet quitting sounds like an accusation, but it takes two to tango, right? In this episode, I will encourage you to fine-tune your communication skills to address the quiet quitting problem, both from the viewpoint of employee and employer. And HR, of course, needs to be empathetic to both. So let's start then by looking at the employee's viewpoint. Given that we are all connected through those beasts in our hands, bags, or pockets, those mobile phones have turned into an extension of work life. It doesn't have to be like that, though. We do not need to have notifications on. We can learn to switch off mentally and be more attentive to life around us when we are not at work, but it can be challenging, can't it? I run a program called the Business Fluency Booster, and it's based on WhatsApp, simply because it's easily accessible, and I wanted to make access to these learning boosts as quick and easy as possible. As an advocate of mental health, though, I make it very clear right from the outset that I never expect an immediate reply, and that the speaking tasks are there for them to practice and improve their business communication discreetly at a time and place to suit them. If they forget one, I give these clients time, but after a week I'll send them what I hope is an upbeat, friendly reminder. But thankfully, the majority of the time I will have designed something that piques their interest enough for them to want to go back to it later. But ultimately, I am keeping my clients accountable, but on their terms. And many have told me that they wish that there was this clear communication around out-of-hours accessibility with their own employers and team members. So if you used to be passionate about your work, team and responsibilities, but are now being more, let's say, protective about your working hours, is that quiet quitting or just looking after yourself? I'm inclined to think that we have learned to be more proactive about our mental health. Quiet quitting for me is too harsh a term to describe what I believe is a healthy approach to self-care. Actually, advocates of sustainable, satisfied and loyal teams would argue that quiet quitting is preferable to burnout, which can take months or even years to recover from, not to mention the blow to that individual's self-confidence, which might never actually come back. So if when you are at work, you are still getting the job done, honouring your responsibilities and being a, you know, half-decent team player, that's not quiet quitting. To my mind, those that are quiet quitting are the ones that have neglected their professional development and have so little self-esteem that they cannot find the motivation or energy to apply elsewhere. The classic that I hear is, oh, well, my English is such a disaster. You know, there's not even any point applying anywhere else. I won't even get to the interview. So, in my opinion, quiet quitting is not a new phenomenon. It just got a new name. It used to be called being lazy or a minimalist, but actually giving it a new name to give it some attention is no bad thing. Because in the employee-driven employment market that we find ourselves in at the moment, we need to do everything we can to boost retention and make sure that once we have the right team in place, they'll not just perform, but overperform, driven intrinsically. Putting in the hours to get stuff done at the same time as sacrificing time for yourself, your family, or your free time activities is no longer something we accept as the status quo. We have finally learned to put our own needs first. It still feels awkward for many of us, but as flexible working hours and other new work principles are becoming standard practice, in offices at least, then this is becoming more acceptable. Flexibility is a two-sided coin, isn't it? Working from home can be a blessing, of course, but as a purely remote member of staff, you are no longer on the radar of decision makers. That can be detrimental to your career. Being more accessible can be a blessing or a curse, and to be honest, your mindset will determine how you view that. Quiet quitting, which incidentally is pronounced quiet, not quite, is about taking a back seat, not forgetting or neglecting your own needs. Quite often we identify ourselves as a consultant, say. We enjoy being depended on. We quite like the idea of being the only one with the answers. But at what cost? Getting gratification and acknowledgement can come from friends, your family, or your kids, if you only gave them a little bit more time and attention. And let's face it, there won't be any former bosses at your funeral, will there? Your nearest and dearest deserve to be enjoyed now. From an employee's perspective, the pandemic prompted many to reconsider priorities, valuing personal time and energy preservation. So what's the employer's role? As a manager, you obviously need to get maximum performance out of your team. And most employees think about quiet quitting not as doing the bare minimum, but as being more protective of their time and energy. The pandemic gave all of us the time and headspace to reflect on whether we really want a job or business that leaves us exhausted. Too exhausted to really enjoy life at the weekends or evenings. Too exhausted to plan things, especially if it involved speaking to people or travelling, both of which are an additional layer of effort if you are already running on empty. How often have you had to cancel on friends who you know would have done you the world of good because you just couldn't face getting ready and leaving the calm compounds of your own home, which might also be your office? Remember that burnout shows up for different people in different ways, and making wild accusations of quiet quitting days or weeks before someone calls in sick with burnout can make you look like an egotistical fool, not an awesome leader. So here are some warning signs to watch out for. No motivational mojo, people complaining about sleep issues, or feeling exhausted, or perhaps somebody is reacting over-emotionally because they're just overwhelmed. It's easy to put it down to getting older, whatever, but these are real issues and you need to be aware of those. When I was working in London, I started to get really acute stomach pain that came in short, sharp bursts. I'm literally never sick. I had at this point in time never taken a sick day. So to begin with, I could just, you know, grimace and get on with it. But of course, these things just don't go away on their own as a rule. So it wasn't long before colleagues noticed me instinctively clutching my stomach. I was sent to the corporate doctor, who made it very clear that this was stress related. I found that odd, as I really loved my job. What I didn't love so much was a rather unpredictably explosive boss, and the fact that I was trying to please two very ambitious bosses at once. I was given two options: continue as I was, with the risk of being what would have been the 14th heart attack that year in my age range, or take it down a notch through more support at work or finding another job. So I spoke to my immediate boss, who was just about to go away for a month-long trip to the US to visit various different offices there and clients, and she said that we would talk about it when she got back. We didn't. By the time she had got back, I had left the company and the country, actually, to live in Germany. I had so much overtime that I only needed to work for a couple of weeks, and I was free and pain-free for the first time in months. To be honest, I'm not really sure whether it was burnout. That wasn't really a thing in the 90s, but I certainly enjoyed the time off, and for me it was time to start thinking about what I really wanted out of life. London was not on that list, neither was financial services. So I moved to Munich for a fresh start, new language and culture, and to see if my now hubby was a long-term option. The organisation would not have tolerated quiet quitters, and believe me, they had some really creative workarounds for making life so unbearable that non-performers or low performers would be racing for the door. For me too, as an individual, I'm a very all or nothing person. Despite what my colleagues told me when I was getting a bit hyper, I just find it really hard not to go above and beyond. And let's face it, if you love what you do, then you are so in the zone that it's easy to keep going on that hope dopamine hit. Staff turnover in this consultancy firm was extremely high, because there was always a fresh batch of university graduates happy to work flat out. I too was inspired by lots of encouragement and praise. I was very proud to work for them, and people's eyes would light up when I told them where I worked, even though I was so young. The location, the suits, the travel. I have to confess that it gave my ego a boost, which in those young years felt like a lifeline to me. But quiet quitting, contrary to popular belief, is not just an issue for Gen Z. Despite the term getting a lot of traction on TikTok, employees of all ages are for the first time thinking carefully about life-work balance, particularly those with young families. Younger team members born between the mid-90s and 2010s have seen how hard their parents have worked, and they really don't see the point of sacrificing everything for a job if you're not getting the job satisfaction and opportunities to make that worthwhile. The priority has changed from work-life balance to life-work balance, even for engaged employees that are an asset to the organisation. Post-pandemic, most of us, if we are asked to stay on late, expect a specific reason now, and some gratitude makes us more likely to consider going the extra mile next time. This is a particularly big problem here in Germany, where the communication style is direct. The focus is on performance and getting things done, and not so much on relationships. So in international teams, this lack of feedback, gratitude and appreciation can really go against the grain. And just because someone feels ignored, neglected, taken for granted, doesn't mean that you'll know about it. Unless, of course, you are blessed with above average emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence enables us as leaders to handle interpersonal relationships judiciously and empathetically. The ability to connect emotionally with employees and lead with emotional intelligence is essential for leadership effectiveness. Talking of which, Kurt Freiherr von Hammerstein, a Cord, was a German general and a member of the military resistance against Hitler. In a discussion about how we decided about the suitability of soldiers, Hammerstein said, "Well, I distinguish four types. There are clever, hard-working, stupid, and lazy officers. Usually two characteristics come together. Some are clever and hard-working, and they have to be on the general staff. The next are stupid and lazy. They make up 90% of every army, and they are really great for routine tasks. And those who are clever and lazy at the same time are qualified for the highest leadership tasks, because they have the mental clarity and guts to make those difficult decisions. Beware of those who are stupid and hardworking. Resist giving them any responsibility, because they will cause problems." So, in the discussion about quiet quitting, we're talking about laziness, but perhaps we are talking about neglect. Well, that's a very strong word, but neglect in terms of not having received the attention that they need to be motivated is, I think, fair enough. The motivation to go the extra mile. To my mind, quiet quitting is more about when you work and not about the quality of work that you do when you are there. If you have someone who is reliable, thorough, and knowledgeable, then we cannot really talk about quiet quitting. They just want to prioritise that balance with private and work life. That's unlikely to qualify them for top leadership, but we need 90% of the people to get the job done, right? The routine stuff. That doesn't make them stupid and lazy necessarily, but for routine tasks, it is expected that life-work balance will be a priority. But what about the clever and the lazy? They are the secret sauce, right? So by respecting their boundaries in terms of time worked, you have someone who has the guts and mental clarity to make those tough decisions that keep the organisation ticking over effectively and efficiently. Bingo. Leaders need to notice more by actively watching, listening, paying attention, and zoning in on their teams. Observation is a leadership superpower. It is a skill that needs to be practiced. In contrast to the controlling, judgmental micromanagement that is focused on what your staff are doing, rather an old-fashioned view, I would say, observation is about how your staff tick, what motivates them, and what they need from you to feel comfortable, accepted, and valued. It's about respect. You can't fake it. And whilst not every member of staff might demonstrate brilliant performance all of the time, the trick as a leader is to zone in on what they do well and give them more opportunities to do more of that. Easier said than done, but if you are to be accepted and promoted as a strong leader, then you need to become a people person as well as a preacher of performance. Managers and HR professionals play a crucial role in creating a supportive work environment. Recognising and respecting employees' boundaries is vital, especially in remote work scenarios. Employers must ensure connectivity and support for remote staff to prevent feelings of isolation and disconnection. So when does quiet quitting kick in? To my mind, quiet quitting starts rather subconsciously when someone is fed up of putting in the hours and not really getting any gratitude or thanks for it. When you feel taken for granted. Most of us are happy to go the extra mile if a client is in trouble, there's an important deadline or a problem to fix. When we pull together to rise to the challenge with a buzz of excitement that goes with the territory, we get that sense of community. And of course, when you've solved the problem or pulled it off, there's that massive sense of achievement. That brings the team together, which is why team building often brings in an element of problem solving. Ultimately, it's acknowledgement that people appreciate. But this is the exception, not the rule, and most people are happy to do their bit in situations like that. But if overtime becomes the norm, that's when resentment and frustration sets in. Perhaps you have yourself to blame, though. By being accessible outside work times, you are not keeping to your own boundaries. You are inadvertently inviting other people not to respect your boundaries. Actions speak louder than words, so if you want your boundaries and private time to be respected, you need to reciprocate. If you are not at work, not on duty, and not expecting anything dramatic to happen, then ignore your phone. Turn it off. Turn off notifications and consider leaving it at home, especially if you have a work phone. If you have a groundbreaking idea or similar, write it down, send yourself an email, or schedule an email to go out at a sociable time. Just because you are thinking about work, you don't have to pull other people into your lack of self-discipline. Try relaxing at the weekend. It's a novel idea, I know, and as a self-employed coach and consultant, clearly I sometimes have to catch up on things when my family are asleep or watching the sport. To be fair, I also do my own sport or do those housekeeping chores during the week, so it swings and roundabouts, I guess. I have to consciously make time to do sport. Gone are the days when I can just give up alcohol and chocolate for a week and lose 5 kilos, sadly. So I need to look after myself, and you should too. Particularly when our kids are young, it's easy particularly as mothers, to put everybody and everything before our own needs. But we need to create some me time, and being protective of your work time, sleep, and accessibility are basics for keeping burnout at bay. After all, as parents, but also as partners, daughters or sons and friends, we all have other things in life that give us joy beyond work. Identifying signs of quiet quitting, such as a lack of motivation and emotional exhaustion, is crucial. Supportive leadership and open communication are critical if we want to address these indicators effectively. So now let's talk about leadership and cultural change. Rather than quiet quitting, I'm in favour of setting, communicating, and keeping to your own personal boundaries. But likewise, you need to respect other people's boundaries and working preferences. What you need to remember here is that each of us as individuals have different lives, and so our boundaries differ considerably. An empty nester with less responsibilities at home will have different priorities and schedules to someone with a young family at home, for instance. Someone caring for an elderly or handicapped family member will require more flexibility during the day, whereas someone else will want to work through the lunch hour to get to the tennis courts on time for his league game. What seems perfectly acceptable, normal, and typical for you might feel a little ridiculous for someone else. But it's not about being ridiculous. It's about give and take. For instance, I am an early bird. I always have been. So I used to expect my team to get into work early and hit the ground running, just because I had already been up for 3 hours. After all, you're at work, right? So work. But I soon noticed that one of my team members in particular was a real night owl and needed at least 3 cups of tea before you could get a half-decent conversation out of them. This was frustrating for me, but my behaviour was clearly frustrating for them too. I was a young manager, so I had a lot to learn, but I learned through observation. When I was beginning to flag early afternoon, this guy would come up with the most amazing ideas. He was just warming up. So be mindful of different body clocks and energy levels, and show a little empathy. It's actually great if a team is balanced with different personality traits that drives innovation and creates a well-rounded team. And as you know, diversity and inclusion is my vibe, so I'm very, very keen to help organisations to really build balanced, beautiful teams that work really well together. Even though it's not always easy, the end game makes it really worthwhile. So avoid seeing the world through your own perspective and push yourself to see it from their perspective. These tough conversations are always uncomfortable, but if in your organisation you suspect that employee loyalty is on a knife edge, it's worth going the extra mile to get to the root of the problem. That means individual, honest and open conversations from a place of compassion, not control. If your organisation has a toxic corporate culture, it's easy to wash your hands of changing anything. Not my problem. But every leader can influence change. That's what leadership is all about. If the vibe at work is stilted and dull, it's your job to lead. If that extends beyond just one or a handful of teams, it's worth digging a little deeper. It's worthwhile pulling in a communication coach or consultant for that independent perspective where there is less emotion at play. Clearly, this is more expensive than resolving it in-house, but for as long as your corporate culture is not healthy, your profitability will also not be as healthy as it could be. By not talking about the elephant in the room, you could be tolerating dire corporate culture and hence magnifying the problem. Remember that your most valuable talent will leave first when quiet quitting becomes too uncomfortable. And given that they will probably go to the competition, your neglect, cowardice, and reluctance is paving the silent road to the exit sign for your top talent. Leadership needs to change first in terms of attitudes and beliefs, and that's never easy. It can be tempting if you have been groomed into leadership with conventional idioms like hard work never killed anyone or plenty of time to sleep when you're dead, but it comes back to whether you can adopt to a modern world of work as a leader. One approach is to have a bar camp. A bar camp is a relatively new training format where the participants determine which topics will be discussed and shared. In contrast to conventional training, where the trainer dumps their knowledge onto the learners, this is a much more collaborative approach. The leaders are not on the stage. They are learning and taking in what is being shared. A well-delivered bar camp can be a real eye-opener for leaders and can go a long way in terms of opening a dialogue about how people want to work and establishing the psychologically safe space in which employees feel confident enough to raise their hopes, dreams, and concerns relevant to their career and the success of the organisation that they're working in. In episode 52 of the Expert Speak English podcast, Jan Toefel reveals some fabulous success stories and secrets behind a digital bar camp. The episode is called Explore the Magic of Corporate Bar Camps. It was episode 52. Like the number of weeks in the year, in case you need a memory trigger, or Eselsbrücke, as we say in German. Anyway, so leadership is pivotal in shaping organisational culture, observing, empathising and fostering psychologically safe environments enables employees to thrive. Initiating dialogue and addressing concerns proactively are key aspects of nurturing a positive work culture. So how are we going to empower employees? As leaders then, the first step is observation. Start noticing more. Step into empathy. The second is to create a work culture in which your team is inspired to go the extra mile. Create a psychologically safe space in which your staff can experiment, make mistakes, but more importantly, stumble upon innovation, improvements, and ideas. Make sure that the experts reporting to you have the space to grow professionally. Give them opportunities to take on responsibilities, a chance to try something new and rise to the challenge, either with a more experienced member of the team or with training that can be formal or informal. There is nothing more rewarding than learning something new and being able to try it out, realizing that you can now do more. Give them a chance to be the best that they can be, and this pride in their work is the best way to build a strong supportive team learning from and with each other. And because all great things come in threes, I would like to make one final recommendation for you. And the third recommendation is this: to murder these three M's. So the first M is no monologues, more conversation. Sometimes you just have to shut up and listen. Number two, no micromanaging, more faith in their abilities. They might surprise you. And number three is no multitasking. Be present for each conversation. Eyes and ears on your team member. They deserve your full attention. Murder these three M's and you will establish better rapport with your team. So no monologues, no micromanaging, and no multitasking. If someone is already a quiet quitter, find out why. Establish a relationship with them. Find out what they want to achieve in their career. What do they enjoy doing? What do they do in their free time? What makes them tick? And how can you adapt their tasks and responsibilities in such a way that they enjoy their work more? If they love complex problems, great. Give them something cognitive to bring them back to life emotionally. If they would like more time with people rather than products, find a way to make them more client-facing or working with the stakeholders. What turns them on career-wise? Sometimes it's worth asking them about previous jobs, about ideas and suggestions, or to join a meeting about a new project or client. We're all motivated by something, and you need to find out what that is and lean into that. It starts and ends with conversation. You hired them for a reason. Perhaps they feel that their talents are going to waste. Find out. Finally, if you are a leader, have the guts to say no for yourself, but also for your team. Fight for their needs. If you are pushing new tasks and performance indicators onto your team without question, you might be causing quiet quitting. Instead of blindly accepting new requirements, projects, and developments, ask yourself whether your team has the resources to fulfill that. Do they have the knowledge, manpower, and time to do it, and to do it well? If not, what needs to go? Most people take pride in doing a good job, but frustration sets in when you just don't have the right materials, staff, or something else to do a good job. It's a matter of pride. Being a good leader is about having the guts to challenge a decision or stand up for your staff. Unrealistic deadlines, requirements for overtime, and peddling productivity all put extra pressure on your team. If they are loyal, already working hard, and delivering on time with a decent quality, you need to stand up to your leader to question whether it's necessary. Don't be a yes man or a yes woman just for the sake of a career advancement. Put your team first, and in time, their performance, loyalty, and effectiveness will be attributed to you as a leader, one that is proud of such a phenomenal team. Because being recognized as a strong leader is incredibly rewarding, but it has to come from them. Challenging unrealistic expectations and advocating for the team's needs are integral to long-term success. So Coco's communication challenge for today, and someone said I should change this to leadership challenge, is to look around you and spot those that are taking a back seat, who are not as engaged at work as they could be or used to be. Whether you call it quiet quitting or setting clear boundaries, be there for them. Listen. Observe. See if you can help them communicate more effectively to those that matter. Because if, like me, you love bringing out the potential in other people, you'll want to make sure that this individual, expert, or colleague is not just going through the motions, but enjoying their job, getting that dopamine hit of doing a good job. That's humility right there. This is something that you can do as a partner, a colleague, or a mentor. We need to look out for each other and embrace healthy boundaries if we are to see our careers as more than just a job. To summarise then, addressing quiet quitting starts and ends with open and honest communication. It requires a holistic approach, considering perspectives from both employees and employers. Continuous, authentic dialogue and taking action on what you discover are essential in creating supportive and productive working environments where employees can thrive. If you enjoyed this episode, you might want to check out some other episodes. I'm going to give you a list here. They're all on the webpage that goes with this episode, and you can see that in the show notes. In addition to number 52, as I mentioned earlier about the bar camps, you might want to listen to number 168, The Humble Leader Guide. It's an interview with Dr. Francisca Frank. Number 167, which is Respectful Leadership. Number 161, which is Excuses or Excellence. Number 154, about emotional intelligence. Number 152, Murder the Monotone Monologues. Number 148, which is Professional Distance. Number 142, which is From Feedback to Feed Forward. And number 139, Empathy, Resolving and Recovering from Conflict with Jürgen von Oertzen. So, number 52, 168, 167, 161, 154, 152, 148, 142, and 139. That should keep you busy. So if you are enjoying the show and go away feeling inspired and informed, or both, then your good deed for the day would be taking a few moments to go and leave me a review. Getting reviews for podcasts seems to be so hard, so you would absolutely make my day. This means that the show gets more exposure and so will help more people. Who knows, maybe by reading your review, you'll inspire somebody to listen to the show and take those measures to back out of quiet quitting once and for all. So have a fabulous week and remember, be the very best communicator that you can be. I look forward to you joining me for the next episode of Experts Speak English. That's it for today. Thank you very much for joining me. And if you want to find out more about how you can work with me, then go over to EnglishSpeakingExperts.com.